Last week, I talked at length about what I see as the importance of National Hunting and Fishing Day, a day that was celebrated last Saturday. I was in Anchorage on that day, so I didn't really get a chance to do much myself to celebrate, unless you count doing a bit of shopping at places such as Alaska Ammo and Sportsman's Warehouse. I have a hunch a whole lot of you around here got to celebrate in more appropriate ways, and for those who did, I'd say the following. Well done. I also mentioned on that episode that some folks kind of scratch their heads and think something's amiss with the refuge celebrating hunting and fishing when two factors drive such. Refuges are targeted to provide hunting and fishing opportunities to the public, as long as those activities do not adversely affect the refuge. Also, Alaskan refuges are charged with providing subsistence use opportunities, of which, arguably, the two biggest are fishing and hunting. The last thing I shared during last week's episode was that Togiak Refuge would have an open house to celebrate both National Hunting and Fishing Day and National Public Lands Day on Saturday, October 5th. Well, that's tomorrow. Today, I'd like to go into a little more depth about what we'll be doing at our open house. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Two things always come into play when scheduling an event like this: weather and competing activities. So let's address those right now. The weather forecast as it currently stands, and according to Weather Underground, shows a 30% chance of rain in the morning and clouds through the day, with modest west winds. In the years we've held this event, we've seen a bit of everything, from downpours throughout to exceptionally beautiful fall days. So a slight chance of rain really doesn't sound so bad. The one big competing activity I'm aware of is that the high school has a volleyball tournament, but I don't actually see that as a competing activity. Fact is, you're probably not going to join us for the entire 4 hours we're open, and you might need a break from the tournament, if you plan to attend. And the tournament might draw folks into the downtown area who otherwise might stay at home. So I'm choosing to see the glasses half full. The tournament might actually help us. For those who'd like to stop by Saturday and visit with us, what can you expect to see? Let's talk about that just a bit. One of the big draws is always a bit of free food and something to drink. Yes, I did say free. We set up a cook tent, provide camp chairs, and have a wood fire going, in a fire pit. And we provide it so you can roast hot dogs and marshmallows, so there's that. Other snacks are often available, and beverages are usually something along the lines of coffee, hot tea, or cocoa. As of the time of writing and recording this episode, I don't have a complete food list yet, and I'm waiting for some of the items to arrive in the mail, so I'm not trying to be evasive on what it's going to completely be. I would like to give a shout-out to the statewide group, Friends of Alaska National Wildlife Refuges, as they pony up the money to be able to provide food, so we are exceedingly grateful to them for their assistance. While I don't know the exact content of what will be shared, Supervisory Biologist Pat Walsh will once again be on hand to share some of his tricks and techniques for what he does with wild game meat, and it's always good. In the past, he's shared such things as how to make ham from a caribou hindquarter and how to turn just about anything into really great sausages, including moose, caribou, and salmon. Some of you probably have a few tricks of your own, so maybe you could show up and swap secrets with Pat. I confess, my own processing consists of the simple: burgers, steaks, and roast. From those, some other things can be created, but all of my wild game meat enters the freezer in one of those three forms. Pat can show you how to take your own game meat processing to the next level. My daughter Shayla will be showing people how to make paracord bracelets, a skill that she picked up somewhere along the line. Paracord bracelets can look really nice and also have a great deal of utility to them. Paracord is one of the most useful survival items you can have on just about any outdoor adventure. Need a new shoelace? It's right there. Forced to build a shelter? Absolutely. During one survival show on TV, I saw a guy take apart paracord. Well, it has smaller cordage inside it, and make a gill net that he used to catch a large northern pike. You can buy commercial bracelets, and some even have other additions, such as a whistle, compass, or fire starter. Making a bracelet yourself, though, is really neat because you can customize the color. Once you've got the technique down, you can use your imagination to make stocking stuffers for friends and family. YouTube can probably show you how. It's a good resource that way. But you can also show up at our open house and learn how to do it firsthand from my daughter. We have a couple of shooting events, so to speak, for the younger and for those who are simply still young at heart. Both of these have been popular offerings at past open houses. What better way to celebrate a day of national recognition for hunting than by shooting at stuff? Our archery shoot utilizes a plywood cutout of a large bull caribou, with a net where the vitals should be. Our arrows have really large, soft tips that make them safe, and we have several bows to fit most sized people, from small to large. Our other shooting opportunity uses a rubber-tipped dart gun and several targets. Again, both have been very popular in the past. If you have younger children, we have a couple of things that seem to hold their attention. An inflatable raft to climb on like a playground toy, and a kid's fishing pond. The raft is really there for anyone, to show just what we make use of for a number of annual projects on the refuge, from environmental education to biological to law enforcement. That said, the smaller kids seem to be the group that find it the most interesting. The kids' fishing pond gives out treats, goldfish crackers this year, to our smaller attendees. I'm still debating which activity I'll be taking care of myself. A couple that are possible candidates include how to hand load and how to make your own snares. Hand loading is something I do enough of to feel like I know what I'm doing, but I sure don't consider myself an expert. I run into enough people who say something along the lines of, "You know, I've always thought about doing that, but just haven't ever tried or started," to know that it's a topic of interest to hunters and shooters around the area. There are probably better folks than me to learn from, but I certainly am not shy about showing what I do. Ditto making snares. I haven't really trapped much in recent years, but I used to trap quite a bit, and I mostly made my own snares. A premise for engaging in both of these activities that's often given is that it saves money. Maybe. If you do it often enough, long enough. Perhaps. Both require materials, and hand loading also requires specific tools to be able to start. So my own thoughts are that it's not as much about saving money as it is being even further invested in something you truly enjoy doing. Along the same lines, biologist Andy Aderman is often on hand to share about trapping and steel traps, two passions of his. This year, however, he has a previous commitment and will not be there. However, fear not. Interim refuge manager Kenton Most will step in to pinch hit for Andy. Kenton will be on hand to share about different types of fur bearers and traps, and he's also going to show how to flush an animal hide, in this case a sea otter, that was harvested by refuge maintenance magician Jack Savo Jr. So, if you want to know a little something about trapping, about fur bearers, or to see how to flush an animal, come on by. We'll have that going on. I also have a list of standalone things for people to learn from or use. Some of the possibilities being considered include a movie showing, Jeremiah Johnson in case you're wondering, a bird identification activity, a wildlife quiz, how to make plaster casts of animal tracks, a slideshow of just what our staff members do, a photo opportunity, bear safety, and how to put together an antler mount. I'd also encourage those who attend to spend a little time in our lobby. I'm tempted to rephrase that to say, spend time in our little lobby, because our public display is not at all large. That said, we have a number of cool things to see, including a number of bird, mammal, and fish mounts, and a salmon life cycle model. We also have some really top-notch art by local artists, and others who have served as artists in residence for Togiak Refuge during recent summers. We try very hard to pack an awful lot into what little space we do have. There's probably more, or maybe in some ways less, because the actual list of what will be offered is still firming up, even as I type up and record this episode. The bottom line? Tomorrow there will be free food and things to see and do at the Togiak Refuge office as we belatedly celebrate National Hunting and Fishing Day and National Public Lands Day. If you're in town, food shopping, or getting your mail, I invite you to stop by and visit with us. We'll be set up and open from 10 until 2. Or, If you're at the volleyball tournament and need to step out for some air, come on over and have a hot dog and beverage on us. Here's hoping we see you there tomorrow. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.